Okay, good morning everybody. Welcome. It's good to see everybody here and also people on Zoom. Thank you for joining us. We are going to have a lot of fun today. I think we always have some fun, but today we are starting off a whole new series of three Shiurim. Please God, I should be here this week, next week, the week after, and then I'll be away for a couple of weeks. There will be a substitute, I'm sure, which will be an amazing experience to come to. I'll announce that when we get closer to the time. And then after that, I'm here next week, please God. Next 3 weeks. This week, next week, and the week after. And then after a couple of weeks, I hope to be back and pretty much through the summer. We are starting today a new series on the Jewish calendar, which is a topic we've never dealt with before in these Shiurim, and on which there is far more to say than we can say in three Shiurim. I'd like to start just by thanking the sponsors again, as we always do. The Shiurim for 2022 are sponsored for an aliyah for the neshamas of Brana Bas-Bended and Zelig Ben Kalman, and we're very grateful for that sponsorship. And I would ask you also please to turn off your phones if you haven't already, so that we can all get through the shiur without any jingling. Okay, the calendar. How do we get into this topic? So somebody sent me an email and said, why is it that the parashiyos are all out of sync this year with Chutz La'aretz, from Israel to Chutz La'aretz, for months and months and months on end? Why couldn't they just have recalibrated the week after Pesach, Achrei Mos Kedoshim, would have been fine, and we'd have all been together again. So that's how we got into this topic, and we will be dealing with that specific question 2 weeks from now, hopefully. But before we can get to a question like the calendar and the parashas, we first have to understand the calendar, and here's how I want to divide it. Today I want to talk about foundations. We're going to have to do a little bit of astronomy. I hope that's okay. I'm not an astronomer, but my level of astronomy hopefully will be what all we need to get through to the calendar. Next week I want to talk a little bit about the matching between the secular calendar and the Jewish calendar, whether there is a halachic problem following the secular calendar, which actually is a bigger issue than you might think. And also, next week I'd like to talk about the strange issue of V'tein Tal U'Matar coming out on the 4th of December, or the 5th of December. Why, you may ask, why don't we talk about that in December? Because I'm never giving shiur the first week of December, because for the last however many years I've been away recruiting, so we never get to give that shiur in December. So we'll give it in June, no problem, and then we'll have it in our back pocket for December. And then 2 weeks from now, please God, I want to get to the issue of the parashiyos, where they came from and how that works. Lots to talk about. So let's start with some foundations. Basic astronomy. First of all, I want to talk about the sun, then I want to talk about the moon, and then I want to talk about the stars. Okay? Everyone knows what the sun is, I hope. The Earth orbits around the sun in an elliptical orbit, not a circular one, which is important, and it orbits around the sun at around 70,000 miles an hour. So if you ever felt a little bit dizzy, that's probably why. You're spinning around the sun at 70,000 miles an hour, 108,000 kilometers per hour, and each orbit around the sun defines 1 year. Now, the average length of a year, how long does it take us to get around the sun, is 365 days, 5 hours and 48 minutes and 45 seconds. It does vary slightly because of the elliptical nature of the orbit, and I wrote down here that the length of the year can vary by as much as 30 minutes from 1 year to the next, but on average, as I said, it's around 365 and a quarter, which I'm sure we all knew. The secular calendar deals with this by having 365 days in the year, which of course is a quarter of a day behind. And every 4 years, as you know, it corrects and puts a leap day in and has a 29th of February, 366 years. Now, this is not quite correct. This overcompensates very slightly because I mentioned to you here it's 5 hours 48 minutes, not 6 hours. So the Julian calendar, which was brought in by Julius Caesar, or in the time of Julius Caesar, before the Julian calendar, by the way, the Romans had a very complicated lunar calendar, not getting into that. Now I put a note about it here, but Julius Caesar and his people brought in a calendar which compensates by this leap day. By the way, their year had 12 months, it had 10 months. Originally it had 10 months, and the year began in March, and that's why the name September October, November, December, which you think about it, Sept is 7 and Oct is 8. September was originally the 7th month of the year, not the 9th month of the year, because the year started originally with the Romans in March. July and August were originally Quintilis and Sextilis, and they were changed to July after Julius Caesar and August after Augustus Caesar. And of course there's a lot of politics in everything, and since Julius Caesar's month had 31 days, because it had to be one of the biggest months, so Augustus, who is the next month, had to also have 31 days, because he can't be less than Julius, so he also had 31 months, which of course causes problems, and that's why we have to take extra off February. So politics and ego get into everything. In the 16th century, Pope Gregory, it wasn't him that noticed this, they'd known about it for some time, that the Julian calendar was getting very much ahead of the year. And it gains, I put here, a margin of around 11 minutes a year. So, okay, on a yearly basis, you don't care about 11 minutes, but it builds up. So by the time of the 16th century, they decided they really needed to adjust. And therefore, the Pope decided that they should all cut around 10 days out of the year to reconfigure the calendar. The Gregorian calendar compensates for that little extra few minutes by taking out a few leap years every now and then. So, for example, on the thousands, on the century years, rather, there is no leap year, even though they do divide by four, so 1800 and 1900 were not a leap year. But on the century years, which divide by 400, 2000, it is a leap year. And it's actually very, very accurate. It only loses 27 seconds a year, and it's only inaccurate by one day in every 3,236 years. So none of us are going to be worried about that. And therefore, the Gregorian calendar caught on. Of course, originally it only caught on with the Catholic countries, because God forbid anyone else should listen to the Pope. And therefore, England very stubbornly refused to change the calendar until the 1700s, when England and America, which was back in those days a British colony, decided to change to the Gregorian calendar in the 1700s. They took out 11 days. They skipped from September the 2nd to September the 14th. Yeah, give us back our 11 days. And many people campaigned and said, it's not fair, we're all going to die earlier because you took 11 days from our lives. The intelligence of the British commoner back in those days was not to be noted. And of course, what the government did is they didn't give them back their 11 days, but they did add 11 days onto the tax year. The British tax year used to start on March the 25th. That was the beginning of the year, Lady Day, which is Christian calendar related. And therefore, they moved it to April the 5th to add those 11 days in. And then next time they hit a century year, which was not a leap year, they said, OK, we need to move it to April the 6th. And then they got sick of moving it. And that's why the British tax year starts on April the 6th. And to this day, that's when it starts, and now you know why. Anyway, so the Gregorian calendar was adjusted. Some countries in the 20th century that switched, Russia, Greece, Turkey, had to cut out 13 days, etc. But now most of the world, apart from the Orthodox Eastern Church, is working on the Gregorian calendar. Fine. The Earth is on an axis of rotation. It is not on a vertical axis. It's actually tilted by 23.4 degrees. That's important. Why? Because that means that the Earth, relative to the Sun, faces slightly differently from the different months of the year as it goes around the Sun. This creates the seasons. And therefore, for 6 months of the year, the North Pole is tilted a bit towards the Sun. And therefore, the Northern Hemisphere has summer. And for the other 6 months, the Southern Pole, the South Pole, is tilted towards the Sun. And therefore, the Southern Hemisphere has summer. The moment at which the everything is directly aligned is called the equinox. There is a March equinox called the spring equinox or the vernal equinox, and there's a September equinox. They happen around the 20th, 21st, 22nd of the months, and they are the two equinoxes, and the solstices are June and December, when there is the maximal northern tilt, or the maximum southern tilt, of course, that's midsummer and, as it were, midwinter. Fine. That, I hope, was all pretty clear to everybody. And therefore, to us, the sun seems to be moving northwards. If we're in the northern hemisphere, moves northwards through the summer and then southwards through the winter. And if you ever look out over the Judean hills, I used to live in Har Nof. We had a wonderful view of the sunset every year, and it moved from summer it was in the far north, and in winter it was in the south, and you could see the sun, as it were, moving through the seasons as it set in different places. What's that? Male Adumim is the same, you see the sunset, Baruch Hashem. Now, Adkan the sun. Now the moon. The moon works in a completely different way. The moon orbits around the Earth, and it takes one lunar month, which is how we define a month for the moon to go around the Earth. The average length of a lunar month is 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, and 2.8 seconds. Although that also differs because of elliptical orbits, etc., and I put that down in the note. There is no concept, cosmologically, of a lunar year. There's no reason why you should multiply the lunar month by 12 any more than 6 or 14 or 153. But we obviously want to try and fit the two together. We'll see halakhically why we want to do that soon. And therefore we talk about a lunar year, 12 lunar months, which comes to 354-ish days. That obviously is around 11 days shorter than a solar year. Now, there is such a thing as a year in the sun. There's no such thing as a month, by the way, with the sun. There's no reason to divide the year by 12 any more than 20, 30, 40, 150. But we want to try and fit them together because there is the moon and the sun, and we'll see hashkafically and halakhically why we do. And therefore, you have three choices. Either you give up on the sun and you just go with the moon. We'll see why, who did that and why. And therefore, the year will rotate around the seasons. And that, of course, is what the Islamic calendar does. Ramadan drops by 11 days. 11 days different, 11 days behind every year. And so every month, every 3 years rather, Ramadan goes backwards a month, basically. So this year, Ramadan's in Nisan. Next year also will be, in probably the year after. And then after that, it will go back into Adar, and it'll go back into Shvat. And therefore, there's around 33, 34 years of cycles that the lunar year loses to the solar year. Or you can just drop the moon and go with the sun, which is what the secular year does, based on the Romans, based on the Egyptians, we'll see originally, and therefore our concept of a month means absolutely nothing in January, February, March terms. It's completely random. It doesn't track the moon. It's entirely just a nominal concept of a month. Or you can do what the Jews do and have a lunisolar calendar, which was most of the Middle East back in the ancient world, the ancient Near East had lunisolar calendars where we compensate. One of the things that they noticed fairly early on is that 19 solar years are almost exactly 235 lunar months. It's correct to within around 2 hours, which is not bad. And therefore, they worked out that if every 19 years you just stick in a few more months, then you will catch up and pretty much reset every 19 years. This is called the Metonic cycle, after Meton of Athens, and in Hebrew we call this a machzor. It's a 19-year cycle, and we actually add in a number of leap years, 7 leap months, I should say. I put it in note number 6. We add in year 3, year 6, year 8, year 11, 14, 17, and 19. And if you want a good way of remembering which are the leap years, I brought you a scale, an octave on a piano keyboard, and you can see actually that the months, the years that we add a lunar, an extra month, an intercalary month, match with the tones and the semitones. I'm not getting into that now. It'll take too long to explain, but I put a footnote about it as well. And we basically correct so that we more or less keep the months and the years in sync. We adjust, by the way, in the Jewish calendar, we'll see in a minute, by having an extra day or not in Cheshvan and in Kislev. And that's how we make up for those 2 hours where the 19-year cycle is out. So that's the moon. And as you know, at the beginning of the month, the moon is hidden. It's called a new moon. In Hebrew, it's the molad, where the new moon is born. And then as the month goes on, we gradually see a waxing moon. Okay, so that the moon gets bigger and bigger, and so in the middle of the month you have a full moon, when the sun is shining directly on the moon, and we can see the light reflecting back on the earth, and then it wanes all the way through the second part of the month until eventually it disappears again. Now the moon is also on a tilt in terms of its orbit around the earth. It's on a 5-degree tilt, which is why we don't have a lunar and a solar eclipse every single month. If you think about it, as the moon goes around the earth, it should block out the sun every month, and the sun should block out the moon every month. It doesn't happen because it's on a tilt, and therefore we only end up with a lunar eclipse every, few months or every few years. Lunar eclipse will always happen on the middle of the month, and a solar eclipse will always happen on or around Rosh Chodesh. It has to when they're in alignment. Okay, ad kan the moon. Now let's talk about days. A day is also an astronomical phenomenon. A day is the time it takes the Earth to rotate on its axis. In addition to the Earth hurtling at 70,000 miles per hour around the Sun, the Earth is also spinning at 1,000 miles an hour around itself. Another reason to feel a little bit dizzy every now and then. And it takes one day exactly
we define a day as the time it takes for the earth to spin around. Of course, you could count the day from the morning, you could count the day from the afternoon, and the evening, we'll talk about that. That's a very important Jewish point as well. The earth's rotation is actually, if you're interested, technically slowing down by around 2.3 milliseconds per century, which again won't bother any of us greatly, but that does mean if you go back into prehistoric times, if you're going back 500 million years, and I'm not getting into the age of the Earth and the age of the universe now, let's just assume we can say that, 500 million years ago, actually the day was much, much shorter. There were only around 20 hours in the day, 425 days in the year. So if you're around long enough, it'll get the days will get longer and longer because everything's slowing down. So that's a day. Dividing up a day into 12 and therefore 24 hours is very ancient. The Egyptians had sundials, and therefore they divided the day into 10 hours. And at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, they added an extra hour for twilight. Okay, that's where 12 hours comes from. 60 minutes in an hour comes from the Babylonians. The Babylonians were exceptionally excited by the number 360. Which divides, if you think about it, by an incredible number of divisors, what, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 12, 15, 20, 30, 60, 120, etc. They were very excited by that number. And in a time when they did not have decimal placement, which only came recently, only came in the last 1,000 years, and they did not have the digit zero, the only way you could calculate anything is by fractions. You've ever seen any commentary by the Rashi, or specifically the Rashbam? There are certain Rashbams on the Gemara in Arbe Pesachim that are 30, 40 lines long trying to calculate the size of a mikveh to that an 8th grade kid could do this in 2 seconds, but, you know, longhand. I mean, they'd need a calculator now because they can't think at all, but whatever. You could do that very, very quickly. You and I could do that within seconds, and it takes 30 lines of a classic medieval Perush to do that because they only worked in fractions. Think how hard it is to work in fractions. You take a half, you take a fifth of a half, and you add on a sixth of a third, and all that kind of stuff. And therefore, 60 was the magic number. It's the number that enables you to do that. Therefore, we ended up with 60 minutes in an hour, 60 seconds in a minute. The Hebrew calendar divides the hour into 1,080, which is basically the same idea. 1,080 was also a Babylonian divisor. Basically, that means there are 18 chalakim, these little chalek, in a minute, each one being a 3 1/3 seconds. And I brought you in the note how we got to 1,080. So that's the day, the hours, the minutes, and the seconds. Okay? It's interesting we don't have a word for seconds. Meaning, minutes are called minutes because they're minute. And seconds are called seconds because we couldn't think of what to call them. So we just call them a second level of minute. We never ended up with thirds or fourths or fifths. There were people who wanted to decimalize the day, by the way, to make 10 hours in a day and centi days and milli days. And Napoleon and his crowd were very into decimalization, 10 days in a week. Never caught on for reasons that we will not go into today. Next, the stars. And then we finish with our astronomy on page 3. The stars are, as far as we're concerned, fixed. Now, of course, they're not fixed because everything's spinning around and the solar system is spinning around the Milky Way and the Milky Way is expanding. But we're not interested in that. From our perspective, the stars look as though they're fixed around the Earth. But, of course, they rotate. Why do they rotate? Because the Earth rotates. Just like the sun goes around, so the stars go around. And from ancient times, this has also been a way of measuring time. I brought you, it doesn't come out so well on the photocopy, but if you're interested, I can send you the original. The stars, the ancient world, grouped them into constellations and kind of rather imaginatively said, well, this one looks like a pair of twins holding hands, and this one looks a bit like a lion, etc. And therefore, we ended up with the constellations, the zodiac, which they grouped into the year. And I brought you here the Hebrew equivalent, which, of course, is very important. There are shuls with zodiacs on the floor from the Byzantine times, etc. We were very connected with this idea. And I brought you the Hebrew names and the Latin names and the months as well for the zodiac, Nisan being Aries, etc., etc. They do fit very well. Some of them fit beautifully with the Jewish year. Aries being the lamb, being the Korban Pesach, Libra, I'm a Libran, being Tishrei, being the scales, weighing that up, they fit in many ways beautifully, and certainly the Jewish perspective on the zodiac is that we did take it seriously. There were, of course, Jews that took astrology seriously, and there were Jews that did not take it seriously. That was a major machlokas we've talked about before in the medieval period. The Rambam completely dismisses astrology as nonsense. Astronomy, yes. Astrology, no. Others, the Ramban, the Ibn Ezra, take astrology much more seriously, but we're not getting into that now. But from our perspective, if you look at these two little diagrams, and then we'll get on with the sources, if you, in the middle of page three, if you're the person P, standing there, looking up, so here, P, the sun has just set, it's just gone down below the western horizon, and if you see, you can see stars A, constellations A through to G. You can't see H through to L, because they're, quotes, under the earth, but you can see A through to G. And of course, as each hour goes by of the day and out of the night, there is a constellation which is rising. Now, during the day, that you don't see them because the sun blots out the starlight, but at night you see the constellations rising. They look different from the northern and the southern hemisphere. And as you go through the night, figure two is this little person, P. In the middle of the night, he can see different constellations. He can now see C through to I, etc. Every month, the sun is blocking out a constellation because it's rising at the same time. That's when the sun is in that constellation. In terms of the mazal, it's in that mazal. Mazal is a word for constellation. And every month, the sun moves from a constellation to another one, and we then say that that constellation is now rising. So let's say in Nisan, the sun is blocking out Aries, it's blocking out Solaire, and therefore the month before Adar, which is Pisces, which is Dagim, is quote-unquote rising. We now see that for the first time after a month, etc. And you can go all the way through. That's how the stars work. We are less focused on the stars today, more on the sun and the moon, but I wanted you to know a little bit about that. Okay, fair enough. I hope that wasn't too long. We've done 20 minutes or so on the astronomy. Let's get into the sources. Number one, the Chumash opens up with a perspective on the calendar. Vayomer Elokim yehi ma'arot, yehi ma'arot, berekiah ha'shamayim. There have to be these lights in the heaven. What are they for? Lahavdil ben yom ben alayla, to distinguish the day and the night. Bahiula otot, and there'll be signs. That could be references to eclipses and things as well. Ule mo'adim, we'll see what that means in a minute. Festivals. Ule yamim v'shanim, days and years. Now, of course, the first thing you see from that pasuk is that the purpose of the sun and the moon is practical. It's not divine. Therefore, the first thing you get out of this is an anti-pagan statement that, far as we're concerned, the sun and the moon are just kelim. They're just meshamshim. That's why the shul is called a shemesh. It serves a purpose, shamash, and we do not in any sense turn to the sun or the moon in order to have any kind of pagan worship. That's why Judaism, by the way, is always very antipathetic to the east. It's always much focused on the west. Because the east, the rising sun, Mizrach, it's where the word Zericha, the shining, comes from, was always the pagan focus. The sun was one of the main pagan focuses of the ancient world. We always turn away from the sun, focus on the west. It's an anti-pagan statement. That's why the Shekhinah is in the west, the west of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was orientated to the west, and everything always faces to the west. Journeys of the Jewish people to the west were always positive. Avram goes westwards, from Ur to Eretz Israel. Galut is always eastwards. Yeah, it goes back towards Babel. When Adam is thrown out of Gan Eden, he's thrown out to the east of Gan Eden. And therefore, the east is always retrograde, and the west is always going forwards in a positive direction. Fine. That's number one. Number two, what does Rashi say these mean? So, Le Mo'adim is the difficult one. Here in Breishit, we don't have any Mo'adim. We don't have any festivals. So Rashi says, Hashem Atid. It's talking about the future. She'atid in Yisrael, it's davot ala mo'adot. The Chumash is obviously given to the Jewish people at Sinai. The Breishis is not given to Adam HaRishon. Breishis is given to the Jewish people. And therefore mo'adot makes sense. These are the festivals that they now have. V'hein nim nim lemolad halavana. And they're worked out through the moon. L'yamim obviously is the day and the night. L'shanim is, the Rashi brings down, u'lesov shlosh me'od shishim v'chamisha yamim, 365 days in a solar year. Yigmaru mahalachatam b'shanim esem mazalot. Okay, that it goes through b'shnei mesei mazalot. Sorry, it goes through 12 mazalot v'hamar shatim otam v'hishana, and that is 1 year. If you look in the Rashbam, go over the page in number three. The Rashbam makes a couple of different comments which I think are very important. First of all, he says mo'adim just means the moon. We calculate through the moon l'mo'adim mehiluch halavana. Now, of course, all the festivals that Rashi said our Moadim are all calculated by the moon. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot are focused on the moon. It's the 15th of the month, Pesach and Sukkot, the center. Shemitchadesh lachaf tet yamim v'chetzi, 29 and a half days in a month, Noadim Moadei Hashana, and that's how we work out all the festivals with Zmanei Hashtarot and other things as well. He quotes a Pasuk in Tehillim, we'll see in a minute. What about the days? Here the Rashba makes an innocent but very important comment, which is not as innocent as we think. Ulayamim, what does he say? Shahari mitseita kochavim at seita kochavim yom echad. From twilight in the evening, from the stars to the stars is one day. Now you're going to say, well, of course, everyone knows that. You know, vayhi erev, vayhi voker, yom echad. Except that the Rashbam on that posuk says, okay, the halachic day, which he's very clear about, of course, goes from sunset to sunset, from nightfall to nightfall. But he says the pshat, on a pure pshat level, the Rashbam, as you know, is a very pshat-oriented perush, of vayhi erev, vayhi voker, is that the day starts in the morning. How does he get to that? Vayhi erev, and it was evening. Vayhi voker, and when it got to the morning, yom echad. That was the first day. Now, he's not suggesting halachically that the day begins in the morning. He's just telling you that that's the pshat in the posuk. The Ibn Ezra, if you know about this whole background, goes absolutely ballistic on this particular issue. The Ibn Ezra himself was not averse to a good pshat here and there, but he was averse to going against the Masorah and giving a pshat in a posuk that goes against halacha. Especially on this issue, which was in the ancient world so toxic, this issue of when the day starts. Because if you think about it, if you're focused on a lunar calendar, it makes much more sense to start the day in the evening. Because that's when the new moon appears. That's when you see it. The beginning of the month is the evening. Whereas if you're a solar kind of person, which in the Egyptian world, that was key, we'll talk about that soon, the day makes sense to start in the morning when the sun comes up. And if you say that pshat in the verse is that the day starts in the morning, then you get into very dangerous ground. The Ibn Ezra even wrote something called the Igeret HaShabbat. Don't know if you've ever read this. If we had time, I would study. We do not have time. Where he writes this whole beautiful the letter, which he said he received from Shabbat. And he's very dramatic. He says, I was asleep one night on a Friday night, and then in the middle of the night, I was woken up, and Shabbat appeared to me and handed me a letter. And said, you have to read this. And I opened the letter, he says, and on the letter was written that on one of your shelves is a heretical perush, a heretical commentary, which says that the day begins in the morning and you have to destroy it and it has to be removed, etc. And he writes this very, you know, this, I say, dramatic piece. He says, I felt like going downstairs, and I think he was living in London at the time, going downstairs and ripping my sforim to pieces, because he's talking about the Rashbam. But I didn't, because it was Shabbos and I controlled myself, and I decided after that to have a polemic and campaign against this, etc. This was very important. Interestingly, even though we found thousands, at least hundreds of manuscripts of Rashi's commentary from medieval periods, people loved Rashi, had it copied all the time, and that's why there's so many questions as to exactly what the true text of Rashi is on the Chumash. People added stuff in all the time, students, etc. The Rashbam we hardly find any manuscripts of. We found one or two, and one of them we found was ripped at this place in the manuscript, which is Vayi Erev Vayi Voker. So this question of when the day starts is incredibly important. Of course, in the Beis HaMikdash, the day did start in the morning. It did. And therefore the night followed the day rather than the day followed the night, and therefore you end up with two systems that have to work together. Of course, the Sidur, the Tfilah, which is based on the Mikdash, also follows that. Every Sidur up until the last, 30, 40 years when Koren decided they'd make Shabbat Sidurim, that start at Friday night, every Sidur when I was small, and I'm sure when you were small, starts with Shacharis. It's Shacharis Mincha Maariv, Shacharis Mincha Maariv. Why is it Shacharis Mincha Maariv? Why isn't it Maariv Shacharis Mincha? Never. It's always Shacharis Mincha Maariv, because the day, the davening day and the temple day starts in the morning. See these two things coming together. Okay, that's not for now, but a little taste of that. That's the day. What about the week? The week is completely artificial. There is no astronomic event that even comes close to the week. The day, the month, the year are all cosmological. The week not, number four. Vaychul ha'ashamayim va'aretz v'chol tzva'am. Everything was finished in creation. Vaychal Elohim v'yom ha'shviim alachto ha'she'asa. Vayishbot Vayom hashvi'i, God rests on the seventh day. Mikol malachto she'asa. Vayivarech Elohim es yom hashvi'i. Vayikadesh otso. Kivos shavat mikol malachto she'bara olim lasos. God gives it a bracha. God gives it kedusha. These are all ideas of spirituality. These are not physical ideas. Bracha and kedusha and sanctity. Okay? These all come with the week. The Chumash brings the concept of the week to the world. And as I say, the cycle of 7 days is not a natural cosmological event. Of course, in Jewish thought, seven is an incredibly important number. We love prime numbers. Jews are very into prime numbers. 3, 5, 7, 13. We get very excited about 13. 613, also a prime number. Rav Yoel ben Nun, of whom we'll see more in a minute, says that Jews are into prime numbers because they are indivisible. That's the point. They represent monotheism. That's why we're very into 13. 13 principles of faith, 13 principles of interpretation, 13 midas harachamim. Whereas the non-Jewish world gets very freaked out by monotheism. They're into dualism, because there's the forces of good, the forces of evil. And that's why we're dafka not into zugot. The Gemara in Pesachim talks about how on earth can we have four cups on Seder night? We are very averse to divisible numbers because, again, they represent dualism. And it answers, maybe there are five cups, maybe there it's a Leil Shimurim. Yes, sir.
What about with weeks? We count the Omer 7 weeks, and we count, and then somewhere else it says, what, 49 days?
Yes.
So it ties the weeks into something, and therefore the weeks do become a concept.
They are a fasura concept. They're a fundamental concept, but they're not cosmological. There's no cosmological reality to Sefirot HaOmer. It's 7 times 7 days. Just like 7 years is Shemitah, seven Shemitahs is a Yovel. And as I say, it's completely due to the idea of Brocha, Kedusha, spirituality, Shabbos, etc. And that's why we have a mitzvah to count each day of the week to Shabbos. The Ramban says this is the mitzvah of Zohar, or one fulfillment of Zohar is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadshoi. We remember Shabbos by not giving names to the days of the week. We don't call them Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And I brought you in the middle of page 4. All these names are either, Norse gods, Viking gods, Woden and Thor and Freya, or if you go across to the continent, they are the Roman gods, Lundi, Mardi, Mercredi, Jeudi, etc. They all give names to the days. We do not, and to this day we do not. Yom Echad, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, Yom Revi'i, because they are all Yom Echad l'Shabbat, the first day to Shabbat, the second day to Shabbat, because every time you say, and the Rambam brings this down, in the morning when you daven, and you do the Shir Shal Yom, Hayom Yom Revi'i b'Shabbat, that is fulfillment of a Torah mitzvah. A Zohar is Yom HaShabbos l'Kadshoi. Therefore, even those communities that don't say the Shir Shal Yom on special days, like Chagim, they have a special, the Vilna Gaon has a special system of different Tehillim to say. Many of them still say Hayom Yom Sheni B'Shabbos to fulfill that mitzvah, and then they do the other Tehillim for the special day. But they still say Hayom Yom Sheni. Yes?
So is it pretty amazing that every culture adopted this idea of 7 days based on the Torah?
Yes, and even Napoleon, who tried to stop it, failed.
And we know, is there any record of any...
Yes, the Babylonians also had a week of 7 days. You get into a chicken and egg, who got what from where, and etc. But the Egyptians were not interested in weeks at all. The Egyptians were interested in the sun. We'll get to the Egyptians in a minute. Okay? Yes, sir.
Just want to point out the French Revolution also changed the weeks to 7 days.
Yes, they tried. Yes, absolutely. And failed.
Right. What happened to Jews on Shabbat?
A good question. I'm not sure exactly how that worked with the French Revolution. One of the issues is there were very few Jews in France in the 1780s. Even though, if you look at the proceedings of the French Revolutionary Parliament after the Revolution, they destroyed everything. They killed the king, the royal family, destroyed the entire infrastructure of the state. They had to start from absolutely zero with nothing. And yet they had an inordinate number of debates about the Jewish problem. It's a bit like the United Nations. Yeah? Of all the things going on in the world, what they are focused on is the Jewish problem, which is now the Israel problem. It's just a rerun. And you're asking, why are you debating week after week? You've got no infrastructure. There's nothing in your country. And there's not even any Jews. You don't have a problem. Oh, yes, we do. Okay? So the French Revolution is an interesting example of that. Okay. So that's the week and the original Bereishis. But of course, yes. Seven. Yes, that was also relevant in terms of the sun and the moon and Mercury, etc. That's where, that's, yeah, exactly, up to Saturn. And the days of the week were named after those celestial bodies, but they weren't linked, the week wasn't linked in any way to the patterns of the way those bodies worked. It was just named because they were gods. Mercury was a god, Venus was a god, etc.
It was at the end from our religious.
Yes. Mm-hmm. 100%. And therefore, us Dafka not using those names is also an anti-pagan statement that we're not going to call Venus Venus. Now, or rather, we're not going to call Friday after Venus. We will get to the names of the month right now. Number five. Of course, we have a lunar calendar. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aaron be'eretz Mitzrayim lemor. When we came out of Mitzrayim, we were given the following mitzvah, the first mitzvah. Ha'chodesh hazeh lachem rosh chadashim. This is the first month, and this is now the beginning of the month. This is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Rishon hu lachem, this has to be the first month. L'chodshei hashana. Now that's interesting. Chodshei hashana. That says that there is a relationship between the chodashim and the shana. There doesn't have to be. The Muslims don't have one. See in a minute, they weren't the first people. But we do. We have Chodshei Hashanah. And they start with Nisan. And if you look here, we see number six. Also, there's a relationship between the months and the days. At Chodesh Yamim, says Bamidbar. Coming up soon. At Chodesh Yamim, with the Slav. Ad Asher Yetze Me'apchem, etc. Chodesh Yamim. It means that there have to be an exact number of days in a Chodesh. That's also from a Pasuk. So there have to be an exact number of months in a year and an exact number of days in a month. That's all coming from Pesukim. And that gives us a challenge because, of course, the new month is every 29 and a half days. So in theory, you would start the beginning of Adar is at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And, of course, we announced the Molad, etc., even though that's not the astronomical Molad anymore. So what we did is, with a fixed calendar, which we'll get to more next week, we basically alternate Tishrei's 30, Tevet, Cheshvan's 29 or 30, Kislev's 30 or 29. That's because we adjust for the little few hours. And then they go exactly in order. Tevet's 29, Shvat is 30. Adar 1 is 30, I'm not getting into the leap year now. And then Adar through to Elul is 29, 30, 29, 30, 29, 30, 29, 29, etc.
That's a question.
Yes.
From a practical point of view, Hashem created the world in a perfect world.
Yes.
Why are we having all these factions?
I'll tell you why. Because we have to make all these things fit. That's exactly our purpose.
Hashem would have created the world in the beginning.
Oh. No, because then what would we have done? Everything fits. We have to make it. We talked about this with the embryology. The point is that everything is created with the need for tikkun. We have to be metaken everything. If everything was fixed, men will be born with a brit milah. No, we have to make the tikkun on that. We have to fix everything in the world. So we have to make all of these solar, lunar things fit together in a way which creates a meaningful calendar. And of course, there are deep hashkafic issues. For example, Ein chadash tachat ha-shemesh. The sun does not renew. There is no renewal. It's absolutely constant, day in, day out, century in, century out. Whereas the moon is a symbol very much of renewal, the concept of Chodesh. The name Chodesh is Chadash. It's exactly the name. Okay, and therefore the idea of combining these things, which we'll see right now, is very much a Jewish idea that we have to try and put it all together. Fine, so there have to be a certain number of days in a month, months in a year. Over the page to page five. We don't have a solar calendar or a lunar calendar. We have a lunisolar calendar. Because in addition to the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, we also have a reference in the Pesukim to the agricultural year. And it's not really the solar year, it's the agricultural year. Look at number seven. Hayom atem yotzim b'chodesh ha'aviv. Chodesh ha'aviv. By the way, there's no chag ha'aviv. There's no chag ha'aviv. That's a mistake people make. There's chodesh ha'aviv. Because Rav Yol Bin Nun, who we'll talk about in a minute, says there's no such thing as a chag on Aviv for spring. There's no spring festival. There's nothing to be festive about in the spring. The whole winter has passed. You've got no food left in the barn. You scratch together a little bit of wheat to make some matzahs, which is like all you can make out of them. And all you have to show for yourself so far is a few shoots. Aviv. And that's why it doesn't even say by Pesach in the Torah, V'samachta b'chagecha. There is a mitzvah, halachically, but... Really? By Shavuos, you already have a crop. Okay, you already have a crop. Are you going to tell me you have the barley crop on Pesach? It's for the animals. What are you going to eat? Okay, the wheat crop already you have on Pesach. You have grain on Shavuos, rather. So on Shavuos, it says, Chag HaKatsir, we'll get there. There's a chag. And it says, Sukkos is payday. Sukkot is payday because Sukkot you gather everything in. Sukkot you have all the fruit, all the grain, and that's why it says v'samachta b'chagecha ata ubincha ... v'hayita achsamech. That's why it's a double simcha. Look at number 8. Et chag hamatzot tishmo, shivat yamim tochal matzot kashet tzivisicha, lomo et chodesh aviv, again not chag aviv, the Pesach has to be in chodesh aviv, kivo yatzatem Mitzrayim, because you came out of Mitzrayim in the spring. V'lo yira'u panai rikam, don't come up to me empty. Lo yira'u panai rikam. V'chag hakatzir, there's going to be a festival of harvest, bikurei ma'asecha asher tizra b'sadecha, v'chag ha'asif, and there's going to be a chag of ingathering, b'tzeit ha'shana, ba'as v'cha'et ma'asecha min ha'sadeh. So the Jewish calendar from the Pesukim has to be months, achodesh ha'zalachem, and it also has to be agricultural. Why? Because we're not nomads. Nomads do not need an agricultural year, because there's nothing to plant. They wander around the desert. The ancient Arabian tribes had a lunar-only calendar. And the Muslims, when they came along, we'll see in a minute, have to have a lunar-only calendar. And it says in the Quran they're not allowed to make it an agricultural calendar. Why? Because they have no land. They never had a land. And Muhammad tells them, you have to be as committed to Islam in Sweden as you are in Mecca. Even though Sweden, it's a light for 20 hours a day in Ramadan, and it's a nightmare, that's a test of your faith. Because Muslims have no land. Never did, never will. Jews have a land. That's the purpose. We have a lunar calendar because of the reasons that we're going to talk about the Chidush and the idea of Chadash. But we have an agricultural calendar because we have a land. And that's the point. The two have to go together. Look at Rav Yol. Rav Yol bin Nun, by the way, wrote a fantastic book on this, which I strongly recommend. It's called Zachar V'Shamor. And it goes all, it works, it's not about Shabbos really, it's about the Chagim, it's about the calendar, etc. Look at number 9, this is in English taken from the Gush website, but it's Rav Yol's Torah. The dual significance of the festivals is connected to the dual yearly calendar of the Torah, the calendar of lunar months, adjusted to the seasonal calendar of the solar agricultural year. It is no coincidence the Torah introduces the calendar of lunar months as the first commandment, and he quotes the Pasuk there. The Egyptians, in contrast, lived according to a fixed and orderly solar calendar, adapted to the pace of life in Egypt, because there were no seasons in Egypt, and to the regular overflowing of the Nile. They had 12 months of 30 days, which is basically the secular calendar, and then a 5-day celebration of New Year. So they had 12 months of 30 days, that's 360, and then 5 days at the end to celebrate the New Year.
The Egyptians also
had agriculture. This is the Egyptians.
So they had agriculture.
They had agriculture, but it wasn't seasonal. It was about the Nile. It was nothing to do with the seasons. It was about the Nile overflowed, and then they were able to plant, etc. The sun has no renewal, it has no 30-day cycle, neither precisely nor approximately, and its cycle measures only years. Similarly, nothing was renewed in Egypt. Everything was fixed and cyclical. Hence, the exodus from Egypt had to begin with the lunar months as the bellies for the calendar. Only then could the revolution of renewal begin. This is the Hashkafa. HaChodesh HaZelachem Rosh Chodeshim means you're breaking away from Egypt. You're not solar anymore. The Egyptians were they worshipped the sun, Ra, the sun god. For them, the solar calendar was everything. We had to break away from that to idea of renewal, the idea we can be reborn, we can do tshuva, we can restart. But then we need to be given the agricultural calendar because you're going to be in a land. And then you have to put these two things together. That's why we have a lunisolar calendar. Let me skip a little bit. He talks about Egypt here. The exodus, about 10 lines up from the bottom, the exodus from Egypt would not have been possible without B'nai Israel turning their backs on the Egyptian solar calendar and accepting the lunar calendar. On the other hand, they could not have entered Eretz Israel and engaged in agriculture of the land without adapting the months to the seasons of the solar year. And like I said, the Muslims, and I brought you a quote from the Quran at the bottom, Dafka, they're not allowed. They say it's pagan. It's pagan to put in that extra leap months, because they want to be able to be everywhere and everything as nomads, as nomadic tribes, etc., purely lunar calendar. By the way, you should know, and I haven't got time for this now, but Rav Yoel has an extremely detailed analysis of Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkot, and also Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Rav Yoel understands, and he brings the proofs for this in the book very extensively, that from Rosh Hashanah to Shmini Atzeret is a period called Reshit Hashanah. Reshit Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei, is the beginning of this 22-day year kind of change. And we blow the shofar to announce that. The 10 days from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, says Rav Yol, is the adjustment from the lunar to the solar year. You're going to say it's 11 days. He deals with that. Don't worry. Okay. And therefore, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur is the adjustment of the lunisolar calendar. And then Shmini Atzeret is the beginning of the agricultural season, the beginning of the rains, we daven for Geshem, and etc. And therefore he has this beautiful idea that from Rosh Hashanah through to Shmini Atzeret is always the beginning and the end. That's why, for example, it says that Sukkot is Tkufat Hashanah, is the turning of the year. It calls Sukkot the beginning, the end of the year. At the end, Kates Sheva Shanim, at the end of 7 years on Sukkot, then, well, it's not the end, it's the beginning. He explains all of that, so you can get into that. It's a beautiful idea, again, connecting the idea of the lunar with the solar. Okay, let's go on. We're doing very well. Page number 6. In biblical times, the ancient Near Eastern cultures were all lunisolar. Babylon was lunisolar, Persia was lunisolar, and the Canaanite calendar, we were also lunisolar. The Egyptians were solar. Okay, they were 360 plus this little 5-day festival, which adjusted for the two. And we see the lunisolar calendar in the Tanakh as well. If you look here in Tehillim number 10, it says Asa Yareach. This is from Bar Chinafshi. God made the moon lemoadim for the festivals. Shemesh yada mevo'o, because the sun knows how it's coming. And if you look in Rashi, then number 11, Rashi says this is a reference to the moon being the calendar and the sun, agricultural year, being the adjustment. That the sun knows how to fix the moon, because the moon sometimes gets ahead or behind, and the sun therefore fixes that. And therefore we have built in, not just in the Chumash, with the Chadashim and also the agricultural year, but in Tehillim as well, the idea of the luni solar calendar. The names of the months, let's talk about that for a minute. In the Chumash there are no names for the month. Just like Shabbat, there are no names for the week, the days of the week, Yom Echad, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi. So too, it's Chodesh HaRishon, Chodesh HaSheni, Chodesh HaShishi, etc. Why? Because that's the mitzvah, right? Chodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. You have to count from Nisan. That's why it's the first month from Nisan, the second month from Nisan, the third month from Nisan. Which raises the question, am I allowed to write the date with the month as a number? Today is what? It's the 8th of June, 9th of June? I've lost track. So, 8th? So can I write, if I were American, 6, 8, 23? Does that get me into all sorts of... 22, excuse me. I know the day of the week, I don't know which year I'm in, right? Okay, is that okay? Or do I get into all sorts of hot water? Because, number one, I'm counting the years from the birth of, you know, we'll see, you know, next week. Number two, I'm counting the months from December, from January. That's against the Torah. You have to count from Nisan. Okay, we'll get into that next week. But there are no names for the months. I brought you in 12, 13, and 14. There are a few months. The second month is called Ziv in Malachim. The seventh month, Tishrei, is called Eitanim, Chodesh Eitanim. Yerach Eitanim, I should say. And number 14, we see that the eighth month, Mar Cheshvan, is called Bul. So there are some names. The Mephoroshim say, some of the Mephoroshim, the Ritva we'll see soon, that these are not really proper names for the month. They're descriptions of what goes on in the month. They're almost agricultural descriptions. But however, the Canaanites did use those names. These are ancient Canaanite names. If you go into the names of the months in Canaan, then you'll see that they have these names, Ziv, and the idea of Eitanim, and Bul, etc. But we never use the names that we use now. Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul, they came from Bavel, and the Gemara says they came from Bavel. We brought them up with us from the Galut in Bavel. Why? Why not just call the months Ziv, Eitanim, and Bul like we used to do? Or Chodesh HaRishon, Chodesh HaShini, Chodesh HaShlishi? In fact, we changed the names, and I brought you from 15 through 20, I'm not getting into them now, that these new names appear at the end of Tanakh. Megillat Esther is full of names, Nisan and Adar. However, look for a second at 15, you'll see it has a dual designation. Look in Esther, he always uses this format. B'chodesh HaRishon, hu chodesh Nisan. It gives you both names.
Just in case you didn't know.
Just in case you didn't know. It's like, it's almost at the change. I remember, you know, I don't remember, I was very little.
You know chodesh HaRishon.
Right.
They knew Nisan.
Right, and they have to use both. It's like when Lahavdil, when they changed over from shillings and pence, which I don't remember because I'm too young, but to pennies and pounds and all that kind of stuff. They had dual, sign for a while. This is 5 shillings, and it's also 25 pence, etc. So the chodesh arizon hu chodesh nisan. So at the end of the pasuk, lo chodesh neimasa hu chodesh adar. Go over the page to page 7. So too with Sivan and Tevet, they're named in Megillat Esther. Elul and Kislev appear in Nehemiah. Shvat appears in Zechariah. These are all at the end of the Tanakh. These names came up with us from Bava. The Ritva says that there is a mitzvah, indeed, to count the months from the beginning of Nisan, and to commemorate Yetziat Mitzrayim, and that we kept this alongside the new names as well. Meaning we did both. We did Chodesh HaRishon, Hu Nisan. Chodesh HaSheni, Hu Iyar. We kept them both because there was the mitzvah, but we brought them back with us as well. And he says all of that ziv and eitanim and bul, that was just describing what the seasons are like. Ziv is like radiant because all the blossoms are out, etc. Bul is withering because the trees are withering in Cheshvan. By the way, Mar Cheshvan, is it Cheshvan or is it Mar Cheshvan? So the Persian name is Ar Cheshvan. The Mar is part of the name. It's not like we put Mar in front of the Cheshvan. That is part of the original name from the, yes.
I thought Tammuz was the name of a god.
Indeed it is. In Sefer Yecheskel, Tammuz is the name of a pagan god. So why on earth did we bring them with us? So that's what I want to come on to now. I brought you 3 opinions here, which we'll look at. Maybe we won't read them all inside, but I'll mention you could look at them in your own time. The Ramban on Chumash, on the Pasuk, he says, have a look here, let's just look at a little bit of Ramban, number 22. The new names came with us from Bava. We didn't have original names for the months. Why is the reason that we brought these pagan names with us? Originally we used to count the months to remember going out of Egypt. By the way, going out of Egypt is not going out of Egypt. It's going out of Egypt and receiving the Torah. Don't forget that. So Yetzias Mitzrayim means that we are a people of the Torah. If you flip from a lunar to a solar calendar, you're making a very strong theological statement. You're delegitimizing or downgrading the Torah because you're downgrading Yetzias Mitzrayim. Originally, we had Yetzias Mitzrayim. Aval kasher aleinu mebavel, when we came from Babel in Yisrael, Masha Amar, we fulfilled the pasuk in Yirmiyah. Yor yet lo yamar oid chay Hashem Asher Eleis bnei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. Yirmiyah said there'll come a time when people no longer say Baruch Hashem, we came out of Egypt. Ki im chay Hashem Asher Eleis bnei Yisrael me'eretz Tzafon, that we came out of Babel. So we wanted to fulfill that pasuk. So chazarnu likra chadashim b'shem shenikram be'eretz Bavel. So we went on to use the names that we used in Bavel. Lahazkir kisham amadnu umisham helinu Hashem yisparach. That we used to live there, and God brought us out. It's zeichel ge'ula. It's a remembrance of the Geula. We brought these names with us to remember. Just like Chodesh HaRishon, Chodesh HaSheni is a zeichel for the Geula from Mitzrayim. So Nisan Iyar Sivan is a zeicha of the Geula from Bavel. And I don't know, when we all leave Hendon, New York, South Africa, maybe we'll call the name something else. Zeicha of the Aliyah from Johannesburg. I don't know. So that's, he says, all the names of the months are zeicha, a zeicha for the Geula. He says at the end, V'hini Nazkira Chadashim, HaGeula HaShenit, the second Geula, Ka'asha Asinu Ad Heina V'Rusham. Fine, beautiful. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky brings the Ramban and gives the opposite answer. Beautiful, we haven't got time to do all this Rabbi Yaakov now. I brought it in number 23. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that we use the pagan names of Bavel to remind ourselves when we came back for the second temple that this was not Geula, that this was still Galut. Interesting. He says that after 70 years in Bavel, we were pretty much assimilated. If you look at Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah, the Jews had married non-Jewish women, they'd forgotten how to pray, they'd forgotten how to daven, to speak Hebrew. That was after 70 years. Can you imagine what it would have been like if we'd have been thousands of years in Babel? There'd have been no one left to redeem. So God brought us back to Israel to rebuild the temple, but it was not Geula. It was Galut in Eretz Israel. This is actually a very interesting idea for our days as to how we see, you know, we live in Israel with a Jewish state, then they had in Israel with a temple. But they didn't have the Aron Kodesh. And they could have. He says, according to the view that the Aron Kodesh is underneath Har HaBayit, which is how the Rambam paskens, they could have had the Aron Kodesh. They could have just taken it out. They knew where it was. They decided not to, because it's still Galut. So too they had pagan names. Pagan names, so in case you think that you're living in Gula, it's Tammuz, pagan god Tammuz. And it's Nisan Iyar 7, very interesting. He says that's why they spoke Aramaic. That's why they changed the script. They changed the script from a non-Jewish script to a non-Jewish script rather, which is a script from the Aramean script. And it was all Zecha of the Galut rather than the Gula. The Bnei Yisachar gives a different answer, and he says, no, the names of the month were always there. We always had the names Nisan Iyar Sivan. It's just we didn't use them because it was Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay, it's not so historically, it doesn't match so much historically, but he says when we started to write down Torah Shebaal Peh or to crystallize it, then we brought the months out. You can look at the Bnei Yisachar, brought you the quote in number 24. Number 25, I just brought you a quote about constellations. Eeyore talks about the constellations. You can look at that in your own time. Now, the last thing I want to talk about today before we finish is the Second Temple. Absolutely fascinating. What was the calendar like in the Second Temple times? So we have literature from the Second Temple, which is in the Apocrypha. Now, the Apocrypha is not part of the Tanakh, but the Catholics retained it. It's part of their Bible. It came in through the Vulgate. And the apocryphal books talk about massive calendrical fights in the Second Temple period. Books like Ben Sira, which was a book that we do quote, the Gemara quotes from Ben Sira, and Yevamos quoted in Daf Yomi recently from Ben Sira, says very clearly it's a lunar calendar. It's the moons that we use. But if you look in Sefer Chanoch, Chanoch is the book of Enoch. There were two books. There's a book which is Slavonic, and there's a book which is Ethiopic. And they talk very much about a solar calendar. A calendar not like the Egyptians of 360 days, but of 7 times 52. 7 times 52. What's 7 times 52? 52 weeks exactly gets to 364 days. So they wanted to have a calendar that was not lunar, was solar, at least to some degree, but every year started on the same day of the week. And for them, that was very important. If you get to the book of Jubilees, Sefer Yovlim, which was a few generations after Chanoch, you have a very big fight on your hands. And if you look here, I brought you a whole quote from the book of Jubilees, which is a book that we now found also with the Qumran Dead Sea Scrolls. We found this in original language as well. It talks, I'll leave you to read this in your own time, about the fact that you have to have a solar year. You mustn't have a lunar year. And these dreadful Jews who are changing, trying to make a lunar calendar, this is all part of the Hashmonaim fight. It was not just about the Greeks. There were big fights about the calendar. There were people that wanted to very much bring in a solar calendar, because again, that downgrades Yetzias Mitzrayim, downgrades Matan Torah, and it goes more to an Egyptian system of the solar world. And they link it with Noah. And they say Noah basically had a solar calendar. We'll get to Noah in a minute. And you have four seasons. Remember Noah, it talks about the seasons, Kor and Choref and etc., etc. And it says that Noah brought with him a solar calendar, of which there were the solstices and the equinoxes, etc. And they linked that the new moons of the first month, the fourth month, the seventh month, the tenth month, etc. Each of 13 weeks. And therefore you have to have 52 weeks. And you read in your own time, you mustn't do a lunar calendar. You have to have 52 times by 7. And the book of Jubilees has a whole polemic against the lunar calendar. This is all linked with the fights with the Sadducees. This is not just random. Rav Yol in his book connects all these sugyas together. The idea of Shavuos being on a Sunday, Dafka. The idea of a Tful Yom, yes or not being able to bring the Parah Adoma, we're not getting into now. The idea of Pesach on Shabbat, the Hanukkah and the Hashmonaim. He links all these up to massive, massive fights about the calendar. If you look for a second, in number 28, look at the flood, look at the end of the flood. Number 28, B'chodesh Hasheni, in the second month of the year, B'shiv'a v'esrim yom l'chodesh, yavshah ha'aretz. The flood, the land dried out on the 27th of the second month. When did the flood start? According to the Chumash. Rashi, V'yiridatan, the rain started coming down, B'chodesh Hasheni b'yutzai. The rains came down on the 17th of the second month, and this is the difference between the lunar and the solar year. Meaning the psukim in Noah are identifying this point and saying, don't you start talking about a solar year. The rain started on the 17th, and they finished a year later on the 27th. Not on the 17th. By the way, the Sefer HaYovlim changes that posuk, and it says that the rains finished on the 17th. To make it solar. The Targum Shivim, the Septuagint, changes the first part of the posuk and says the rains started on the 27th. To make it fit. This, we've forgotten about this. Because for us, it's all 2,000 years ago. But this was a very, very big fight. Remember Qumran, the Dead Sea Scrolls, the children of light? Who are the children of light? They're the solar people. The solar calendar. And therefore, this was part of the world that we used to live in the Second Temple times. That world was brought to an end. The Churban destroyed the Sadducees, destroyed the Essenes, destroyed the Dead Sea cults, destroyed everything. What was left was rabbinic halachic Judaism, and that we need to really start next week. I'm going to begin next week with the last two sources here on the sheet, the last three sources, which is what actually became the halachic calendar of when we make the new moon and when we make the intercalary month, and that is the calendar that in the end became fixed. But today, at least we've had good foundations, and I think we know where we're going to start next week. Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay? Leave it there, and next week we'll do more. Be'ezrat Hashem.